Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagura.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Nathan Zagura, Vic Carucci, just 2 days away from Browns training camp. Kicks off this Saturday, 9:30 a.m. out here in Berea at the facility. We certainly are looking forward to that. We've got a big show lined up for you here today. We'll be joined by ClevelandBrowns.com staff writer Mr. Kevin Jones at around 1:30 p.m. Eastern. We will be joined by the president of the Cleveland Browns, Alex Shiner, at 2 p.m. Eastern, and the WWE Intercontinental Champion of the World, yes, yes, The Miz, will join us in the second hour as well. It is Thursday, so we got some other fun things we're going to get to, including the defensive backfield position preview. We're going to get to that. We're also going to play a little fact or fiction. But before we do that, we have some housekeeping to get to, and we're going to start off with some recent transactions of the Cleveland Browns. First of all, Justin Gilbert signed his deal. He was out there today, passed his conditioning test. He will be ready to go for the Cleveland Browns team. Also want to update you on the fact that the following members of the Browns were added to the active roster today after, you know, maybe a little bit of a hiccup yesterday. That would be offensive lineman Chris Faulk, defensive lineman Jacoby McDaniel, offensive lineman Jeremiah Warren, and running back Terrence West. So much ado about nothing there with West yesterday. The team also waived running back Jordan Brooks, leaving Ray Agnew really as the only true fullback on this roster, right, and trimmed wide receiver Kenny Shaw the day after they had trimmed Connor Vernon as well. So just kind of cleaning up there. The team now has 86 players on the active roster. Billy Wynn still on the NFI list. It looks like he might be battling a little bit of an injury and should be back hopefully soon for this team and ready to go for camp. That is certainly the hope there. So that's where the Browns stand right now. They also yesterday made a move to bring in an offensive lineman who was waived by the St. Louis Rams. So they continue to add depth, as you and I speculated about, right, on that offensive line. An undrafted free agent from Nicholls State plays the tackle position. So the Browns making some moves there as they get ready for camp, kind of trimming the fat, deciding who really doesn't, I guess, have a chance to make this team. Those guys are out of here. And then the people that they think maybe from around the league, as some people do make some moves, they look and see what they can do there. So the guy they added yesterday, by the way, Abasi Salimu, who was waived by the St. Louis Rams. We picked him up.
Started, big guy.
Big too. Guy. 22 out of 23 games started in Nicholls State, offensive tackle. Big guy, 6'5", 3'10".
Yeah.
I'm a honker.
He's a honker. He has had just some health issues, I guess, that he's got to overcome. But not a bad guy to, I think, have around possibly to end up on practice squad, but certainly has the size, but also the mobility. I did some research on him last night and found out he's actually, for his size, a guy who moves pretty well, which fits the scheme, fits that lateral movement of the outside zone block scheme. And you're right about this time of year that you start looking at the roster. You look at a guy like Kenny Shaw, just use it as an example, not to pick on him, but you could make the conclusion, you were able to make the conclusion weeks ago that he was not going to make this football team. And I think those decisions were already in place, but then vacation schedules take place, life just kind of goes on, and then you wait until you get to this point. Really, there's no football activity. There's nothing that's going to affect his future or your team's future with making a move like this in June or the early part of July. But you do this now, the final kind of cleanup of your roster as you get into training camp. And there's going to be other moves, but we think the obvious areas where this team is addressing, we know one of those is going to be offensive line. I think the wide receiver position is very much in flux, and we'll see who else comes aboard through this. And then I think the other area is the front seven, especially the defensive line, where there might be some surplus and where there might be some opportunity for this team to maybe do some dealing to see if you've got some extraordinary depth. Now, Billy Wynn's unavailability to practice at the outset is something to look at. I don't think there's anything serious there. But this is a guy that if you're going to potentially count on him to be a starter, and you and I are very bullish on his chances of pushing Ataba Rubin into that starting lineup at end, he's got to be on the field to do it, and he's got to stay healthy to do it. So right off the bat, this maybe creates a dilemma for that particular pursuit. But if he gets there, then you can start thinking about what surplus you might have with a seventh-year veteran in Reuben. And if another team has a need, and you have the obvious need that we see right now at wide receiver, we'll see what that's all about as well. Another hot topic, it's being reported by Adam Schefter of ESPN that Josh Gordon's hearing with the NFL would be Friday, August 1st. And I guess it'll be at that time that we finally find out. But
that's
you're
ridiculous.
Shaking your head, and I'm shaking my head,
it's
too.
Ridiculous.
Because it's ridiculous that camp literally has to be a full week old almost to figure out the situation, the status of your most important, one of your most important
and
players.
And it's 8 days before the first preseason game for the Cleveland Browns. It's unfair. I think the league has done the Browns a disservice. I think that the league is also...
Was a busy court calendar or something like
that? I mean,
that crowded?
Me a break. Well, because they announced Ray Rice's suspension today, which we'll get into in a second as well.
And other adjudications.
And others have gone in the last few weeks. Good word, SAT word there from Notorious, adjudication. To me, this Josh Gordon thing is garbage. I think it's ridiculous the way that they're handling it. I think the time frame that they're using for it is absurd. When you consider that the first report about this came out on the day two of the draft, that's back in early May. And here we are. This will not be resolved until August. Give me a break. It's a joke. It's unfair, I think, to the Browns. I think it's unfair to Josh Gordon. It's unfair to this coaching staff that has enough to deal with as a first-year staff to have to worry about the decision we talked about yesterday. What do you do with Josh Gordon when he is here in camp? Do you give him first-team reps because he's your best wide receiver by a large margin? Do you give him third-team reps? Do you give him no reps? What will you do? Mike Pettine did talk about it yesterday and will say, said that he will get meaningful reps, that Josh Gordon will get reps while he's here at practice, and we do expect him to report tomorrow and be on the practice field on Saturday. It'll be interesting to see how that ultimately plays out. But I got to tell you, Ray Rice getting two games from the NFL is laughable. John Harbaugh saying that this is a great lesson for kids that there are consequences for your actions, to me, is laughable. When you look at what certain players are facing in the National Football League for violating substance abuse policies. And I know it takes multiple times. You have to be caught with marijuana multiple times to get that four-game ban. That's your stage two ban, would be four games. I don't know that we should live in a society where I don't care what you do smoking weed. If you want to smoke weed, that's your business. You're putting your career and your team in jeopardy because of the way that the antiquated rules of the National Football League's the way they are, to me, is wrong. They need to be updated. But that's one thing. And I don't care if you smoked weed every single day and failed a drug test every single day. I have a tough time thinking that doing that and harming no other human being other than yourself, potentially, really, and in, you know, kind of ethereally your team and your franchise can be more severe of a punishment than hitting a woman in the face and dragging her through a casino on video. And there is a video of whatever happened in the elevator that is apparently on lockdown. But to me, it is just, it's a slippery slope. And that's what I said on Twitter. I think this is a slippery slope for Commissioner Goodell. You're seeing former players, people who played with Ray Rice, say this is a joke. Derek Mason took to Twitter and basically decried the ruling and said, basically, Roger Goodell is telling women that they mean nothing to the National Football League. And sure, they're going to go out there and they're going to parade all the pink products that they're going to try to sell in the Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which is good. Ultimately, it is a good thing. But there's something hypocritical about, I believe, what they're doing in relation to this. To me, if I wanted to send a statement to the youth of America, you are saying it is more acceptable to hit a woman in the face than it is to get caught smoking weed twice. And it's, in my mind, I can't get my head around that.
Well, when you're comparing those two transgressions, I guess that's the best way I can put it, for sure you're going to come to that conclusion. That said, I try to separate these things on a case-by-case basis. No, I don't agree that the punishment for Ray Rice was severe enough. And, yeah, the statement that makes, all of that is an issue. But in my mind, I'm separating it, Nathan. I hear everything you said, and you made a very sound case here, and your points were well made in terms of comparing the two situations. Not comparing, though. I'm going to put them aside because with regard to Josh Gordon, it still comes down to what is right or wrong in the course of the league's look at this thing. You can call it antiquated and outdated, but the policy is the policy. That's what it is. It's the same for everybody. And when you violate it, you violate it. So the fact that some states in this country have legalized marijuana use, and then there's medical marijuana use legalized in different states, New York, where I'm from, the most recent, I guess, to join that list. But those are issues that don't apply to the discussion of someone who's repeatedly done something that is in violation, that's put him in a bad place with the NFL, and the NFL's got to react to it, and it's going to react to it. And whatever the punishment is, it is. Now, to say that you got to use this scale for everything and compare something that Ray Rice did or something another player did, there's been vehicular manslaughter. I mean, there's been cases like that. And I'm going back with the history of the league. People involved getting behind the wheel drunk and then getting involved in an accident or causing I go back to the late Rodgers, the defensive lineman for the Detroit. He ended up with the Detroit Lions.
Sean Rodgers?
Why am I blanking on his first name?
It's not Sean?
No. But I'll get it. But okay. Anyway, that was an issue where you've got you've got a player who had a problem going into the, and this was a day when I think the league did a very poor job of trying to monitor and punish players who did things that were, and teams that did things that were transgressions, who want to follow the law, whatever it might be, very serious, very, very serious situations. Now, I want to say this. I want Josh Gordon's situation to certainly be resolved in a way that is beneficial to him, beneficial to the Browns. I'd be lying if I said otherwise. But at the same time, I got to a place, especially after the last DWI, which I know isn't tied into this, as I understand it, tied into this case. They're going to review it strictly on what he violated with regard to the marijuana use. Is that doing him any service if you're just trying to minimize that and give him the least amount of punishment? What statement is that making to him or to anybody else? I don't know. I'm not loving the idea that we would sit there and say he should get lesser punishment because acts that we consider worse have gotten lesser punishment. I don't know that I'm comfortable with that, because I think each case has to be kind of looked at, and it's still repeated violation of an NFL rule.
I understand all that. The reason that I use the term slippery slope is because I think the NFL needs to look at itself in the mirror and figure this out, because there are different gradations of an offense. And I don't care, you know, if you do, for example, in this country, you could commit as many misdemeanors as you want, but if you commit three felonies, you're gone for life in some states, and certainly in California where I grew up. So you need to look at where the crime is. To me, you're basically saying with two games, that what Ray Rice did, okay, is the exact same as what Josh Gordon did last year, when, by the way, he had to appeal a four-game suspension down to two games. Because that's the only way that you can look at it. The only thing they can do is fine you and suspend you or ban you from the league, etc. There, it in some ways, it is an apples-to-apples comparison. They're saying in their mind, in Roger Goodell's mind, beating a woman and dragging her through the casino merits the same punishment from the league as your second offense of smoking marijuana. When it's reduced, by the way, down to two games. That's the only way I think that you can look at it. That's the only way that I can look at it, because those are the facts. It's two games for what Ray Rice did, and it's two games was last year at the beginning of the season for what Josh Gordon did. It was four games for what Joe Hayden did, taking Adderall a couple years ago.
Do we have every bit of evidence of that case regarding Rice to know what else they might be considering? You know, other than I've seen the video that you've seen, that everybody's seen, that's been viral for months now, right? Going back to, I think, the combine. I think that hit around February. Are there any other details? Are there any? Is there even one bit of circumstance beyond what we saw there that is being accounted for? Like, what does the league know that we don't know about this?
Hotel. Okay.
Right.
But there are cameras in all those elevators. That video exists of what happened in there.
Right. But what is it? What does it show? Do we know what it shows? The one that hasn't been. You're suggesting there's one beyond what we've seen. Correct.
Yeah, there has to be. If all you've seen is the post after the fact, so, there's something that happened.
All right.
In there.
So let's assume that it's there and they've looked at, they being commissioner and the leagues looked at it. What could they have seen that said, nope, this is only a two-gamer and not a season or a lifetime ban from the league for reprehensible behavior that you and I can see is obvious? Why isn't it obvious to the commissioner of the National Football
League? Because I don't think they care. I don't think they care about that as much. His first violation, he was otherwise a quote-unquote good guy.
You don't think the commissioner cares?
Because it's not that public. If there was the public outcry for and people saw this video.
There is public outcry.
He doesn't care.
What's going on with Ray Rice?
He doesn't care, obviously. I am not comfortable
here saying that the commissioner doesn't care that a reprehensible at beating up a woman and doing what Ray Rice is alleged to have done to even beyond what we saw, the woman on the ground and his, by the way, he and then he married her
a week later so that she would impress charges. Right. So you don't have to testify against your spouse.
Bizarre case to say the least. But that she went along with that too is all crazy stuff. But that said, I'm not going to believe the commissioner doesn't find it every bit as reprehensible as you and I do. Or anyone else does.
I would disagree because he basically knows what happened.
I know the guy, and I've known him for many years. This is a husband, a father of twin daughters
who lacks judgment.
You're going to have to do a lot better than that to tell me that he doesn't know. That I want to know what he knows or doesn't know to make this rule. I'm just not getting that he's. For the sake of pushing this aside because it doesn't matter to him or he doesn't care enough about him. And he knows the ramifications of that. He knows what people would say.
And he doesn't care.
Which is what you're saying. I'm not buying that he doesn't care. But I don't have a good answer. No, I don't have an answer for you as to why that ruling looks as soft as it is. So I'm acknowledging that, but I'm refusing to believe there's something else at work here. I'm going to try to find out about it. But as I sit here right now, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not buying that guy doesn't care. I know what he cares. I know what he cares about. But I've talked with him about any number of subjects that deal with player behavior through many years before he became commissioner to now. He has been the most discipline-oriented commissioner of any, much more so than his predecessor, Paul Tagliabue, who as a lawyer was always ultra careful about dispensing discipline because he worried about the legal things. Roger comes from a place of image and PR and marketing and all that, which is even more so a reason why you would think he would be sensitive to the reaction of this, the backlash
I just don't
Who
think,
likes this?
I'm just saying I don't believe that in any way, shape, or form this type of an act can be considered in terms of the punishment meted out on par with some other type of acts. I don't care if it's your second time or what. If you hit a woman, yeah. To me, that's worse than smoking a building made out of marijuana. I could care less.
I'm 1,000% in agreement with you. A building, but again, I'm just keeping it in its own compartment. I don't agree with how this was ruled. We're in total agreement on that. Right. But I'm just. As far as the comparison thing and the scale of justice versus something else, all of that goes aside to why in this particular case did this ruling come down the way it did with such a, as we say, a soft result. All right, we're just getting this thing started. It is Cleveland Browns Daily driven by Liberty Ford. Our Ohio Business Machine's hot topics of the day, we've been running down those. Kevin Jones, staff writer for ClevelandBrowns.com, he's going to join us in about 10 minutes or so, 1:30. We will have Alex Shiner, the president of the Browns, join us at 2 p.m. Going to get into training camp and all that folks can expect when camp opens, when the first practice, we should say, happens on Saturday. So we got a lot there. We're going to do some position review for the secondary at 2:15, Factor Fiction at 2:30. A busy show on a Football Thursday. Vic and Nathan, ESPN 850 WKNR.